Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 71 and a half. This is bonus show edition. You know how we like to do it. It's late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. John Morgan is here. Cole Coffee is with me, and I'm happy to report we are not in Provo, Utah. We are in Salt Lake City, Utah. My man, I think we made a pretty good move here. We did a veteran move. Salt Lake City was sold out all week, the week of UFC Fight Night 92, hence the reason that the UFC was staying an hour away in Provo, and we were there too. But what we did is we looked up and we found out that after the fights, there was actually a hotel room available. So we're literally in the shadows of the arena from tonight because we only got a couple hours, man. We ain't even got time to mess around here, bro. We gotta like do this show quick and get on an airplane and head back home.
Yeah, take a quick shower because I'm feeling ripe from running around or whatnot. But yeah, I feel like we saw really nothing of Salt Lake City today because we were literally so close to the arena. Came in, saw the whatever outdoor fashion show that made it so hard for everybody to stay here in town. You know, that was kind of closing up and people were leaving out of that. But yeah, I'm definitely glad we came here because doing the work that we have to do and then to factor in an hour each way going back to Provo
would not have worked out. It's funny because we really didn't get a chance to get a feel because we were staying in Provo. I feel like we never really got a chance to know if there was a buzz in town. Was Salt Lake City ready for the UFC? Were they hyped up about the event? Just looking on paper, the attendance, what we ended up drawing tonight, UFC Fight Night 92, there were 6,689 fans for a $481,000 live gate. Not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but, I mean, it was a fight night card. We said going in, it wasn't, you know, the most star-studded card that I've ever seen. But I tell you what, the fans in there tonight were going nuts, man. From the opening fights all the way through the main event, the crowd in Utah made it exciting for me, man. I think it made it a memorable card. I know you're back in the press room, but I think you guys didn't even have audio for a little while, right? So,
yeah.
But I mean, were you able at all to get a sense for the fan? Because I'm telling you, this was, I mean, I'm not going to throw them up there with like Dublin or something like that, but as far as domestic crowds go, pretty damn impressive.
Wow. No, not at all. Except for maybe when
nah, man.
Except for maybe when Court McGee got done or got his win. But no, I mean, we were pretty much, it's pretty well insulated back there, and we were kind of in the deep bowels of the Vivint Arena.
Vivint Smart Home Arena.
Yeah, wow. It's quite a name. In the nice Lexus VIP room. Mm. Wasn't even the proper media room. They moved us off into a different room. It wasn't the real media room. But it wasn't bad.
Bro,
but,
you were in the Lexus boardroom.
Lexus boardroom, you know, yeah.
All right, let's talk about the main event.
I couldn't get audio to work.
But you're not bitter at all.
No.
You're not bitter at all. Let's talk about the main event. Yair Rodriguez, Alex Bruce Leroy Caceres. We were hyped up about this fight all week. You know, leading into this, I think this is the one fight that everybody really had their eye on. And yes, you know, two first-time main eventers, so, you know, not huge superstars of the sport, but certainly with Yair Rodriguez, a guy that people had pegged for something special in the future, and Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres has looked really good since he went back to featherweight. And to me, I got to say, Cole Coffee, this thing delivered from start to finish. It was entertaining. When this thing was over, the only thing I could tweet was, that's about as fun as it gets, man. That was two high-level, creative, fun mixed martial artists going in there and banging and gosh, man, I just think it delivered on every aspect of it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think Yair, if anything else, if people weren't aware of some of the stuff that he can throw and do, I think tonight was a perfect showing of it. And, you know, on the opposite side of that, I thought Alex did wonderful as well, you know, countering and doing some moves. You know, he was a little bit upset, you know, after the fact that he didn't do as much. I think he was kind of sitting back watching. But really, with what Yair was throwing at him, I mean, he would have got caught if he wasn't playing it how he was and kind of sitting back a little bit and watching that and doing. I think he would have got caught because, I mean, some of those crazy moves that he was doing, you know, like try a spinning back fist into a roundhouse kick into like a spinning back fist kick heel wheel thingy. I mean, it was really, really impressive. So I think if people hadn't paid attention or didn't know who he was, I think they were certainly impressed with what he was putting out there tonight.
You have to. He's just fun to watch. I mean,
really fun.
That's the kind of guy that to me is now must-watch TV. I mean, it's somebody that you're like, they're on the fence. They don't know if they like MMA. I think that's a guy you go, what? You've never heard of MMA before? Oh, watch this guy Yair Rodriguez fight. Because, I mean, it's like, you know, I saw people tweeting, it's like watching a video game play out, it's like watching old school, you know, martial arts movies, like stuff that you thought was fake, and he's going in there and doing it for real, and I think it's incredibly fun to watch. Now, I will say this, we were in some altitude here. I think the altitude in Salt Lake City is around 4,200 feet, so it's not quite as high as Denver. Yair did come in quite early so he could get used to it. He did start to fade a little bit as the fight wore on. I don't know if that's so much we attribute that to the altitude and just go, well, it's going to get to you, or if you say, man, maybe that high-flying, crazy style just absolutely cannot be sustained for five rounds.
It definitely could be both, but you definitely can't discount the fact that we are at altitude or at a high altitude, so maybe it did wear down and makes you wonder, man, if he's at a lower place where that's not even – you know, a factor, what's the guy going to be able to do? I mean, even though while he did throw down, I mean, he still finished the fight with another, like, crazy cartwheel kicky sort of thing,
right at
the very end. So he still had stuff in the gas tank. Yeah. So, what a heck of a guy. And I mean, yeah, very, very exciting to watch. But, you know, as a fan of Alex as well, I thought he did a great job. And, you know, he's still constantly getting better, and even though this is a loss and he was kind of down on himself, I think he'll go back. I think he's with the right people now to really kind of keep pushing him forward. And, you know, he had some things of his own that he was kind of throwing out, and he caught Yair a couple times too, you know. So, you know, no discounting Alex. You know, this was definitely not just a one-sided show of just – new unique things just from one side. You know, Alex was definitely throwing some stuff out there as well. So definitely they proved that the featherweight division is still very, very exciting.
Oh, definitely exciting. Yeah, it's funny. Let's talk about Rodriguez first. First of all, a great Mexican turnout. I didn't know there was quite such a population here in Salt Lake City, but there definitely was. And it was cool to see after the fight was over how many of them just flocked to the side of the cage to try to get his autograph and pictures. And, you know, even though he was hurting, you could see him visibly limping. And ultimately, he wouldn't come to the post-fight media area because he had to be transported to the hospital. So potential foot injury. I'm sure we'll find out more about that tomorrow. We'll follow up with the UFC and find out what we hear. But did
it's
have
probably
some
that last
issues.
Kick he threw.
Wouldn't that not be crazy if it was?
It was probably that last one because he threw his whole body weight and then that actually connected
right over the top.
Yeah, right onto Alex's shoulders. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't maybe dislocate something or do something on that one.
That would be nuts. But to me, it sounds kind of bad to say this because Cain Velasquez looked awfully damn good the last time he was out. Yeah. But, you know, I feel like Yair Rodriguez is primed to be that guy that they thought Cain would be that Mexican star that really gets fans into it because, you know, Cain doesn't speak the best Spanish in the world, didn't live in Mexico.
Right.
And I think the Mexican people don't disrespect him. They still embrace him and keep him as one of their own. But I think this is their homegrown guy. And, you know, he speaks the language. He lives in the country. And I think this is the one guy that Mexico might be able to rally around because I think this kid's got a bright future.
He definitely does. And I definitely will say that, I think they will rally around him, but it's going to be tough to discount Cain. I think people just love the big guys.
That's true.
And even if he's not, you know, maybe born and bred and one of their own and doesn't really speak the language, they still absolutely adore him. And he's proud of his heritage and you know, he's actively getting better. You know, maybe as his Spanish gets better, you know, that won't even be an issue anymore. But I think that people just love those big heavyweights. You know, I think people want to hang their hat on that guy and be like, this is our dude. But I think they have tons of love for this kid because he's so exciting. And, I mean, you know, he handles himself very well during all the events that the press does.
Oh,
he's the perfect candidate that you want to kind of represent your company or company of the country. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, if MMA was probably a sport right now in the Olympics, I guarantee Mexico would have been like, this is our number one guy. You know, he'd be out there carrying the flag for their MMA team or whatever. So, and he's just a good – he's got the whole package going on for him for sure.
I'm anxious to see, you know, the new MMA Junkie rankings come out every Tuesday. George Garcia, Gorgeous George from MMA Junkie Radio. He kind of chairs those up, and then myself, Dan Stupp, Matt Erickson, you know, we kind of have some back and forth on it. We listen to his recommendations. We kind of, hey, I think this. What do you think? We have a little debate on it. Now, coming into this week, Yair Rodriguez was in our honorable mention category. So right there, alongside Duho Choi, another incredible up-and-coming young featherweight, Darren Elkins, who's been around for a while but is resurgent. But you look at those, you know, that bottom of that top 15, you got Brian Ortega, Mirsad Bektic, Hakran Diaz, Dennis Bermudez, who picked up a win in the co-main event. We'll talk about him as you start to go up, Jeremy Stephens. I'm going to be really interested to see what they do with him next, because I don't think that you really want to throw him to the wolves yet. I still feel like he's developing. I feel like Yair is getting better every time we see him. You know, this was a main event. This was a five-round fight. All the media, you know, he said to us the other day at the open workouts, this is the first time I've done something like this. You know, he's still learning it. I think maybe you could start to dip your toe in there a little bit. You know, Brian Ortega has Hakran Diaz coming up. Like I said, Mirsad Bektic, that's a dude that's a stud. He's undefeated. You know, maybe you could start to get in that top 15, but I don't think, me personally, I don't think this kid needs to be rushed to the top. I feel like, you know, the title, there's so much going on at the top of the 145 pound division anyway right now. You can kind of slow play him a little bit and let him develop his skills a little.
Yeah, I think so. And you look at this card. Well, I guess it 1, 2, 3, 4 featherweight fights. You know, a lot of guys active. You're right. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I mean, while I do agree that he should be fighting, he's moving his way up there. I agree with you too that. You know, not that we want to bring up Sage and how they rushed him forward. I definitely don't think they're pushing behind Yair anywhere near like what they were doing with Sage. But I definitely think that they could probably do their point and at least try to do a little more promotion. Doesn't mean that they have to throw him to the wolves too early. But I definitely think there's some other guys, maybe another fight or two before they start throwing them the top 10, top 15 guys, just to maybe get some play out of them. But especially so exciting. I mean, why not? I mean, throw him out there. But yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to sit and think who would be next. But
I think you want to give him somebody stylistically fun, just because he is so exciting.
I think that was Alex. I think that was
definitely exactly.
Was definitely, I think, the best probably one I can think of right now. I mean, even when we saw him, you saw him across the ring from each other. Their body types were so similar as well. I mean, length, everything looked so very very similar. So I definitely think this was one where they were like, all right, let's play a styles match. Now, if they want to try to build him up, but probably give him somebody that's maybe going to test something else, maybe somebody that's better on the ground and see how he does with somebody that's better wrestling or has better grappling, maybe better jiu-jitsu to see if he could defend against that. So I guess we'd probably have to start looking to see who's near the 15 range, somewhere around there, that maybe has that sort of characteristic so they can see how well-rounded he is and make sure he's not Well, I'd feel stupid to say he's not. I can't say one trick pony, because you look at him, it's hard to say one trick pony because he had a lot of tricks he was throwing out there.
Man.
But
well, you know. It's funny because I mean this will be Sean Shelby's job to help kind of guide him through the ranks. I mean it's Sean's job to create contenders, and you know he did create Conor McGregor. Now Conor McGregor obviously did a lot, and when I say create, I guess that sounds a little bit wrong because it sounds like it's being crafted by that person.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of people say that they allowed Conor to avoid those strong wrestlers until he absolutely had to. I kind of wonder if that's what they'll do with Yair as well. Is, you know, he's got some pretty slick jiu-jitsu, so I think you could put him up against, you know, some jiu-jitsu stylists, and certainly his striking, you could put him up against anybody. Maybe just, you know, maybe you wouldn't want to put him up against, you know, somebody that's going to basically just try to hold him down or what have you, just try to out-wrestle him only. You know, even though you said at some point he's going to have to take that test, I think you can kind of, you know, maybe creatively work him a few more fights. And I am interested to see, too, because you know Mexico is going to want to have him fighting there.
Yeah.
Of course, Mexico City is at high elevation. We don't know if elevation was the issue tonight, but you want to be careful there. And, of course, you know they've already got a main event in November. I don't know if they'd want to put him on a you know a lower-tier fight, or even if he'll be ready by November, considering he may have a foot injury.
Yeah, you're right.
Or do you bring him to Vegas and put him on some of the big pay-per-views as like a first fight or a second fight on a pay-per-view and start to give him that shine a little bit? I mean, I'm kind of interested to see.
I just don't think they, even though they made him on a main event here, I don't think he's anywhere near where they want for that card to be going down to Mexico. I think he would be on the main card,
right?
But I think he would probably be back down to three rounds because I don't think they could give him the main event by any means.
Well, of course, they already have Tony Ferguson and Rafael dos Anjos. Yeah. But if something changed or if they had another Mexico event.
Because then you can start to think, well, if we're not really going to try to throw them too many top 10 guys, then how can we throw him in a main event?
And how are we going to sell tickets?
I mean, even though he is a draw, I think he's a draw to have on the card for sure. But I just still don't think he's got that to where he could pull a main event there. I think this was a nice test to probably see where he is and where, you know, where the meter sort of set on him. I thought it was interesting that, you know, in the fans, when Alex started getting some stuff going on, you could actually start to hear the crowd get a little hyped up for that. Because for a while there, I didn't know who they were pulling for. I thought it was more of a Mexican crowd going
it
on
did,
out there.
Yeah.
But it kind of, there was a moment where it switched, where I think the other guys kind of woke up a little bit, and they're like, wait a second, let's root for the American guy, you know?
Yeah, we got the USA chance. Did you hear the vuvuzela that was in there?
No.
I don't know if that came through the audio. Somebody got a vuvuzela in there. They saved it for the main event.
That's awesome.
Waited until the Mexican was in there, but we started hearing the horn, man. It was funny.
That's funny.
All right, let's talk about Alex Caceres. Man, just relaxed and calm all week. Calm, cool, collected. His entrance to the cage was something special, man. Just coming in, singing, dancing. Got in the cage, was literally dancing. Then as Yair Rodriguez was making his way to the cage, I kept my eye on Bruce Leroy. He was literally like pointing out people in the crowd and waving to them and giving them the peace signs like he does. And I was just like, this dude is so relaxed. And I tell you what, you know, it started out, and Yair Rodriguez looked fantastic in the early going. I'm like, oh, this is not going to go well. And then, you know, you remember Bruce Leroy had said, I love the fact that this is a five-round fight because I feel like I'm going to come on strong. I feel like that favors me. And sure enough, he started to come on strong. I'm like, oh, my God, he called his shot. He's going to come back and win this. I thought it was a great performance by him, and he was so disappointed when we got a chance to talk to him. But I don't think he needs to hang his head for anything, man. I think that was a fantastic performance.
It was fantastic. And I thought about asking, you know, what positives, you know, if he even had the chance to really think about the positives. And I think later on when he goes back and watch it, he's going to see that it wasn't as bad as he thought. But I think when he got to the end, because he still looked like he still had more in the tank, and I think that's why he was upset, is that he didn't push himself to that point to really do it. But you know, I think ultimately, too, he was smart, because if he would have just rushed out knowing that, hey, I'm a badass, I got all this energy, I can do this, you were going to get caught with one of those spinning wheelie things that I have a hard time describing, because that was what was so unique about what Yara was throwing. I mean, his combinations were two or three, four deep, you know, in some instances, going from a punch into a kick. And I mean, if you're just rushing in there only thinking about what you want to expend and what you want to do without taking account what he's doing, that's when you get caught, you know, and that's what drops you. So I can understand his frustration, but I also I think when he goes back and sits back, he'll realize that, you know, he did really, really good. I mean, granted, it was a loss, but I mean, if he would have pushed it any more, he would have run the risk of getting caught. But he did take a couple punches, and I thought he weathered it really, really good. And I think that's why he's probably more upset. It's just to the fact that he probably stayed in his head too much, you know, thinking about the possibilities and whatever. And I think that's where, you know, some guys also usually get on themselves, because they're like, I thought too much. I just didn't let it go. I didn't throw. I didn't go where I know I could have went. And I think that's why he was so sort of regretful in the back. I mean, it sucked a guy that was so happy, and he was still, you know, saying all of his wonderful phrases and metaphysical, all this other crap. The dude is so zen, man. It makes me sick. But it doesn't make me sick. It makes me jealous. You know, it was sort of weird to see him in that sort of state at that point, because it's just like, whoa, I want to see happy. I like the happy-go-lucky Alex, not the one that's like upset at himself for not doing something that he thinks he should have did, you know, because he put on a good performance.
He did, and I tell you what, you know, at the time that he came and spoke to us, he didn't know this yet, or I don't think he did, I would guess, but the judges' scorecards came out, and going into that fifth round, now, I had Yair Rodriguez winning 4 out of 5 rounds, so to me, he was already up 3-1 going into the fifth round, but if you look at the judges' scorecards, it was 38-38, 38-38, and on the third judge's card, he was winning 39-37. So he wins that fifth round. He wins the fight.
Wow.
So, I mean, he was that close. To me, on my card, he was already down 3-1. He needed to finish. I gave the final round to Yair, as everybody else did as well. Well, I say everybody. Derek Cleary turned in a scorecard of 49-46 Alex Caceres, giving him rounds 1, 3, 4, and 5, only giving Yair one round, round 2. I mean, listen, I'm not here to pile on judges, but I think that's a really bad scorecard.
Wow, yeah. I definitely think there were some times where, he looked really, really good, but I don't think I would have gave him four rounds by any means. I mean, maybe I was not paying attention to the same fight or something, but, most of the times I looked up, you could just see that Yair was clearly outstriking him. Mm-hmm. It's just his percentage, and they threw a stat up there. Yeah, the volume. I mean, like, when you hear the commentary start to say, Caceres is closing the gap in the distance and striking, it's like,
right.
All right, it's even clear enough. And then when you see the numerical, it's like, wow, should we be showing those numbers? I don't know if that would influence the judges, if they would see those and say, okay, I was completely wrong when I thought this guy was outstriking, because clearly the stats say this, So I don't know if those are the tools that are something we can give judges so that they can better make a decision and all the stuff, because that's a lot of information, I think, for them to hold. And even though they do their scorecards and they're only supposed to be, I guess, remembering right there that one round or whatever. But yeah, when you see guys that clearly just see something so different, then you start thinking all the wrong things, like, maybe put some money down or something.
Oh, you went there.
So who knows?
Not good. Well, so we didn't get to hear from Yair Rodriguez. Hopefully we'll get an update on him in the morning. But we did get to hear from Alex Caceres, a very disappointed Alex Caceres, still a little bit zen, but a little bit disappointed. And here's what he had to say.
Well, Alex, I know you've got to be a little bit disappointed with not getting the result, but it was an incredible fight. I know it's still fresh. How are you feeling right now?
I feel all right. Just bumps and bruises everywhere. I'm disappointed because I knew I could have done more. I felt like during the fight I could have done more. I should have done more. I just let him get off first. It was just one of those things. I guess I was in my own head too much. I thought about it a little bit too much. And I wasn't necessarily getting hurt by any of the punches or kicks or knees or whatever. And I was just giving him too much time to set up his stuff, where I felt like there was a couple times during the fight where I was standing in front of him. He wasn't doing anything. I could have win. And I just let him go first. And so that's where I felt like I messed up.
I know you talked about that you would get stronger as the fight were on. You were looking forward to having five rounds. It did seem like momentum was shifting in your direction. I mean, were you satisfied with how you felt in the later rounds?
Yeah, definitely. I felt like I was definitely landing more in the later rounds. I definitely felt like he definitely took round one. I felt like in round two, after I got the takedown, I definitely edged that out. I stayed on top for a long time. I got it when I wanted to, landed a lot of clean shots. Third round, I felt like he came back a little bit stronger. Then the fourth and fifth round, I felt he was throwing a lot more, but I felt like I was landing cleaner. But I just knew that he was just more active. Even though I was landing, I knew that I had to be a little bit more active to win those rounds. And so in the eyes of the judges, he definitely looked more dominant in there, even though I didn't feel like he was landing solid.
When you got there, for the judges' result, did you think that you had done enough, or did you feel like...
No, I knew right when the fight ended, I should have done more. I could have done more. I knew it was going to be close. I knew it was going to be a split decision. I knew he was going to edge it out. He was a fan favorite. I was the underdog. So in order for me to win that fight, I just had to be a little bit more active.
What do you think about him? I mean, people are making a lot saying that he's, the next big deal, all the creativity that he has in there. I mean, when you're still on the other side of him, do you think he's destined for something great, or do you feel like you're right there with him?
I think he's definitely good, man. He's definitely good. He's talented. Has a bright future ahead of him. During the fight, I definitely felt, I felt like I was there, like there wasn't, he wasn't going to finish me. I didn't feel like that at all. On the ground, I felt comfortable, I didn't feel like I was in trouble when I was there either. It was very scrambly and stuff. We would like reverse each other and stuff. We'd probably end up neutralizing each other out and just getting back to the feet. But then again, if I did a little bit more, like that's what I felt. It was just a little bit more if I got like a couple more punches off, if I started first a few more times, it would have been my side. I was landing every time I felt like every time I threw and every time I pushed him back, I was landing and I was landing a solid shot. I was rocking his head back. I cut him a few times. So I knew I was landing with a little bit more significance, but I just wasn't inactive enough.
I know this is all kind of about the journey for you as a martial artist. So where do you think you go from here?
We're going to get back in the gym. I definitely want to prepare more for five-round fights. You know, that's one of the big things, especially in the first round. I didn't feel like I expended my gas tank completely, and that was the problem. You know, I was conserving energy for five rounds, thinking that it was going to be tough. But then again, I have to realize I was doing five rounds in camp. I was doing five rounds when I was here. You know, and I knew I should have realized that I had the gas tank to expend a lot more energy. But I was trying to save myself for the later rounds, so that's why in the first, and especially in the first round, I was dancing around a lot, trying to make a miss. You know, just moving around, letting him get off first, just because you know, it's five rounds, my first time doing it, and I didn't want to gas out, I guess, you know, trying to fight smarter.
You did get an extra $50,000 for this Friday night. Does that make it any easier to deal with?
Like I always tell you, man, it's good. It's good that, you know, they're going to pay me, but it wasn't about the money. I wanted to make my performance, I wanted to perform better than I did last time. You know, I wanted to just become better as a person. So, the disappointment's still there. You know, I live below my means anyway. I'm glad and grateful that I got the bonus, but at the same time, it doesn't erase the fact that I lost. So I want to get back in the gym and I want to get better at it.
You guys were really playing up to the crowd there at the end. How was the arena, the atmosphere, brand new place for UFC, for the fans like tonight?
They were nice, man. They were awesome. You know, felt the fans were very respectful. Even though a lot of the fans probably didn't go for me or didn't like me in the beginning, I felt towards the end of the fight, you know, I definitely felt like I gained their respect. Everybody was like, "Dan, this is just a hell of a fight." You know, I felt a lot of acceptance after going all those five rounds with him.
All right, the night's co-main event saw Dennis Bermudez pick up a very nice decision win over Honey Jason. Very convincing win. I thought this fight honestly was going to be a little bit more competitive, but Dennis Bermudez was in complete control, to be honest with you. Takedowns were there, looked good on the feet. I was surprised he was so willing to go into Honey Jason's guard to play that jiu-jitsu game, but really never found himself in trouble, save for that one brief scary moment in the third round. Dennis Bermudez was in complete control. A bloody fight, man. Honey Jason got sliced open. It was funny because I was talking to Rob Monroe, who was the cut man who was working that corner after the fight. The first round, he got cut open. They stopped the bleeding there. Then he came back after the second round. He was bleeding again. I thought it was the same cut that had opened back up. It wasn't. It was actually another cut. So the guy got sliced open quite a bit. But credit to Honey Jason, man. He gave it effort till the very end. He almost got that submission win at the very, very end. Or, you know, kind of the comeback choke there almost happened for him. It didn't, but I thought this was a fun fight, even though it was pretty one-sided on the scorecards. I thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, it was, and I thought those elbows that brought that cut, you know, was that the first round?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was vicious. I thought Bermudez looked good. I mean, he constantly just impresses me each time, and you know, and it's Honey's not a small dude by any means, and I thought Dennis did a great job of controlling him, kind of, you know, doing his will, and that was probably, I think, one of my favorite performances of his, just for the fact that, I don't know, I mean, in the back, me and the guys were kind of talking, you know, and Honey's one of those ones that I know in the past when I'm like, I write him off, and he always right. proves me wrong, so I guess maybe I was already kind of setting myself up where I was already kind of leaning that Honey was going to prove me wrong again, so me and the guys were in the back, and I kind of actually picked Honey to probably pull some win out of it. And
right.
Then immediately as the first round started and those elbows started and he started bleeding, I was like, well, I guess I was wrong. You know, because I think it just set the tone for the rest of the fight, and I thought Dennis did an incredible job and really came out virtually unscathed.
Was that the money changing hands that I heard about when I came back to the press room?
There might have been 50-cent wagers that were based. Then we kind of got screwed because the third party was like, well, I'm betting that this goes to a decision. So if it went to a decision, he won regardless of who it was. And
that's a cheap bet.
Yeah, it was kind of, we kind of got suckered in it. But at that point, we were just fucking bored in the back. We were like, let's bet 50 cents. And there was nobody around to give us grief for it because all the PR was gone and there were absolutely no other media in the back room.
Yeah, not a lot of media. I mean, there was some local coverage there. I think some of them left after court fought, to be honest with you. And you know, they came out to press row as well. As far as traveling media, I mean, MMA Junkie, of course, you and I were here. Dave Mandel came out for Sure Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Not a ton. Jose Young showed up today, or yesterday. No, he was at the weigh-ins, which he's working for Sports Illustrated now. He's a Phoenix-based journalist. But that was about it. It was very, Very light turnout.
Yeah, very, very light turnout. There were some local ones. In fact, there was one woman in the back that remarked that it was her first time covering or actually even going to an event. She's like, yeah, I got to sign this event, and I have no idea what to expect or whatever, you know. So thought that was interesting that, you know, it was like her newspaper or whatever, just like, here, just go cover this thing.
See what you get.
See what you get, you know. And, you know, and it'd be different if, I think, maybe if it was in a place like Vegas or if there was a bigger, maybe crazier card where there wasn't a lot of room for media. So I think we saw some new media that we hadn't normally seen. But, again, yeah, they were in there for their local guy and then just kind of disappeared and then show up at random times. And, you know, we were kind of scratching our heads like, where is the media going that was here? And then they go somewhere else. And I'm like, are they watching something else? Is there something else going on right now? You know, but such is the life for us that are stuck in the back. You know, we sit back there and watch it and interview and make up stories about the rest of the media and what everybody else is doing when they're not in the room.
Dennis Bermudez, after the fight, he called out Frankie Edgar. I guess it makes some sense. You know, they're both from that part of the world. He wants to do it at 205 in New York. As I said, you know, we've got him in our rankings, kind of around that bottom part of the rankings. Of course, Frankie, not really involved in the title picture for a little while. He's just kind of stuck after that last loss. I don't know. Are you down with that fight, or is that too much for Dennis Bermudez, or you dig it? What do you think?
I mean, it's definitely a big jump up in competition, but I mean, I could definitely see where, you know, I mean, there's no discounting a win over Frankie definitely puts him up towards the top. I mean, the guy just fought for the title. I mean, I definitely think it's a fight that Frankie would agree to do because I think Frankie is into that kind of thing, you know, especially he probably consider it an easier fight, even though I think it would be a good, tough fight for him.
It would be fun. The pace.
It would be a fun.
The pace.
Be a lot of excitement.
Wrestling.
Very, very,
I think I'm okay with it. At first when he said it, I was like you just said, like, that's kind of a big jump up. But now when you start talking about, like, now that we're kind of sitting back here, having a frosty beverage or two, talking about it.
According to the UFC's ranking, let's see, we had, what, Kawajiri, number 14, fighting number 5, Cub Swanson.
Right.
It's not unreasonable by any means, you know, and I think if there's enough hype, there's enough stuff going around. I mean, all it takes is Frankie saying, why not, you know? I mean, he might want to keep the guys up top because, you know, once you start going a little bit further down and should he happen to take another loss.
Then you're really in trouble.
Then you really start running a problem there. So that's the only thing I could see where really he might not want to do it, but it would be a very, very exciting fan for the fans, I think. I mean, look at both guys into it, and why would somebody not want to do it? I think the only thing we can really argue about is because a lot of other guys, some of the guys higher might be thinking that they should get Frankie first because they know that a win over Frankie is pretty much a springboard to being in a contender match, I would think,
absolutely,
at this point.
For anybody.
For anybody. So I think that's why a lot of people are probably going to be calling out Frankie right now, and there might be some others that say that they're more deserving because they're closer to him and maybe have been waiting for Frankie, but they knew Frankie was waiting for that title shot.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we didn't have a press conference tonight because it was kind of a smaller event.
But look, it's still late as shit.
Funny how that works out. Dennis Bermudez did come back to the back and talk to us. It was kind of funny because they brought him back in the back and we were basically all just standing there like just waiting for him, and then he was in his phone, like, sending out some tweets and some Instagrams or whatever
Instagram,
else. Was on Instagram, sending out some stuff and, like, just not really paying attention to the fact that we were all waiting on him. And then all of a sudden he looked up and literally every journalist is turned over and looked at him. He's like, oh, what, me? You're waiting on me? Like, yeah, bro, we're waiting on you. But we didn't want to say nothing. We were trying to be polite.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a funny moment. But he then stepped in front of the cameras and had this to say.
Dennis, obviously that was a big win, impressive performance. What did you think about the fight tonight?
Honey Jason definitely brought a lot more to the table than expected. I thought he would have gassed a little harder. It appeared that he was way more hungry being on the, what was that? His cancel of his membership, you know? How am I drawing a blank right now? Yes, his suspension. Jeez, Louise. Tell you what, I think I got hit in the head tonight. I think being away from the cage made him hungry, and he definitely brought it tonight.
Yeah. It seemed like you were willing to take him down, to go into his guard a little bit, where that seemed like it might be a dangerous spot for you. Did you feel that you were always going to be comfortable?
I love a guy's guard, man. I that's I feel very strong there. Man, me and my gym, man, at Long Island MMA, we grind on the ground, you know, bi-weekly hard, you know. And I think before I got to Long Island MMA, my jiu-jitsu was the weakest part of my game. And it took them a while, but they broke me. And, you know, this is where you need to work, man. This is where your flaws are. So we take a guy down. I'm really good at taking people down. I can hang with the best of them on my feet. So we take people down, we beat them up.
The third round, you know, things were going your way, and then you got in a little bit of trouble there at the end. You know, how tight was it? How much trouble were you in, and what was going through your head at that point?
He wasn't under my chin. For a split second, I was like, man, he's kind of covering my mouth and my nose, and is there a neck crank here? But I was right next to my corner, and my jiu-jitsu coach, Greg DiPasquale, was just like, it was like I was a video game for him. He was just coaching me through the thing. I stayed calm. I looked him in the eyes, and I was just listening to what he was telling me to do.
And after the win, you had the immediate call-out ready to go. Why is that the fight that makes sense for you?
Man, the reason why I'm here in the UFC is to be a champion. It's not to make money. It's not to be famous. It's to be the champion. A win over Frankie Edgar puts me right where I want to be for a title shot.
All right, Kolkoff, I'm just going to call it like it is. The rest of the main card was not great. It really wasn't great. Talis Latis did pick up a big win over Chris Camoles. I mean, Talis Latis is one of those guys that has a really good career record, is relevant in the 185-pound division. Definitely not a title contender at this point in time, but certainly relevant in the division, and just dominated Chris Camoles. But it's tough because it was such a grappling-heavy affair. I mean, he controlled him from start to finish. And why would you stand and bang? I mean, you can't blame a guy if they're really good at jiu-jitsu for deciding I'm not going to stand and strike. But for whatever reason, Talis Latis just doesn't seem to have that. Like the way Demian Maia has gone back to his jiu-jitsu, but we all really like it. Like, it's exciting, and there's a lot of transitions. And I don't know, for whatever reason, Talis just isn't quite resonating with the fans like that. And it was an impressive win over Chris Camoles, but just not incredibly exciting, to be honest with you. And then, I don't know. I'm impressed with Talis. I think he's got some incredible jiu-jitsu skills, but I don't think he probably earned any fans.
Yeah. Well, again, it's a tough one. I mean, I think anytime, you know, you see guys that start getting the middleweight and bigger, people want to see the finishes. They want to see the knockouts, you know. I mean, and if it's just sort of a grounding, and you see a lot of that sort of thing in control. And even though this did end in a submission, you know, again, you know, I think it would have, you know, if he could have managed to get it in the first or the second, you know, it might have been a little bit more exciting, because it maybe would have drawn, you know, on some people, maybe wore him down a little bit. But Camozzi's a tough character.
He is.
He's a tough guy. I mean, you just can't seem to write the guy off. And when I do, he usually proves he's a lot tougher than what most people peg him to be. So even though it might not have been the most exciting, I mean, one, he had Latis was going against a super, super tough guy.
Camozzi's he's one of those guys that – Chris Camoles is never going to be a world champion, but I'm okay with him being on the UFC roster as long as they want to have him.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was just thinking. I was like, you know, he can't. I mean, I'm not sure how many in a row now that is for him. Because I think he was coming in with a loss after somebody, but I don't know. I'm not a stats guy. For all I know, he was on a four win streak. He wasn't on a four-win streak.
He was on a three-win streak, actually.
Was he?
He had beaten – now, it wasn't against, you know, the biggest of names, Tom Watson, Joe Riggs, of course, who's had his difficulties over the years. And then he did have the big win over Vitor Miranda earlier this year in May. So he did have a nice little streak going. I think he certainly – it's just – I mean, you know, the deficiencies that he has in the grappling department are – apparent. I mean, he faced Jacare a couple times. Jacare owned him in both those fights.
But you're right. He's not going to get to the top. He's not going to get to the top, but he's fun watching. But hell, I mean, dude keeps knocking off three fight win streaks. You know, you really can't really dismiss him by any means.
Nah, I mean,
but
he's 5-2 in his last seven fights, and his loss are to Talis Latis and Jacare Souza.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Not too bad. He's just got to shore up that takedown defense and that grappling defense. But But I like Camozzi, man. I think he's a good dude, and I think he comes in to scrap every time. I know he was frustrated. I will say this. Talis Latis, you know, he's having trouble with the submissions. He got in, you know, once he realized he wasn't going to get the choke easily, he turned to the punches. He marked up Camozzi's face pretty good. He landed a lot of left hands. So,
yeah.
You know, again, it wasn't the most exciting fight, but it was a big win for Talis Latis to kind of stay relevant in that picture. Another fight that it was more entertaining, I think, was Santiago Ponzinibbio picking up a decision win over Zach Cummings. Santiago Ponzinibbio looks improved, man. He was moving well. He was striking well. He was getting tagged, though, as well. And Zach Cummings thought he was going to be able to wrestle, I think. His takedowns were just getting totally shucked off and pushed away, and I think that surprised Zach Cummings a lot. Another guy that was on kind of a quiet winning streak was Zach Cummings. But Ponzinibbio looked really good here, really fast in his movement. His striking looked good. His takedown defense looked good. Cummings was busted up by the end of this, and Santiago picked up a nice win. So I thought that was a decent fight as well. Trevor Smith over Joseph Giuliani, excuse me. Trevor Smith just dominated here, the newcomer. We were talking to his coaches last night, and they were pretty excited about him. It sounds like he'll probably drop down to welterweight at some point in his career, if not right away. Trevor Smith, I actually picked against him in this fight just because he had some layoffs, and I wasn't sure what he still had left at the table and whether he was going to be able to consistent. Giuliani came in undefeated, a little bit of hype around him, came in on short notice, fighting up a division, but Trevor Smith actually just owned him on the ground, and it didn't earn Trevor Smith any fans. The crowd was booing him pretty openly, but it did get him a win. And of course, that main card opened up with Marina Moroz earning a split decision over Danielle Taylor. Yeah, this was tough because Moroz, I thought, was doing what she had to do.
Mm-hmm.
She was so tall. And it was so obvious that Danielle Taylor had power in her hands that I thought Moroz was doing the right thing in the way that she was fighting, but it just made for an incredibly dull fight. And I don't know, man. I don't know you gotta fight smart. I mean, this is you need wins in this company to stay around. You need wins to move up, and I think Marina did exactly what she needed to do to win the fight, but it just wasn't fun. And when she did take a chance, I mean, Danielle Taylor cracked her with the right hand. Again, it didn't turn out to be exciting, and I just kind of leaves me in a weird position because Marina Moroz, I think, has a lot of talent. I think she's very tough. I think she's very skilled, and I think she's got some talent, but I don't know that helped her move up the division at all. And then meanwhile, you got Danielle Taylor, who took this fight on short notice, is super, super, super tiny. And she's going to face this kind of issues against everybody. And so I don't know what she does, because unless she's cool going to an Invicta and fighting at 105,
she might have to. But you're right. They even said that on John Anik and those guys were chatting. They pretty much even said, like, you know, be interesting to see how she fights when she's matched up to somebody that's more comparable to her size. And
who is that?
They just don't exist on the UFC roster. There's nobody that's like that. But she does have power. I'm not saying that short people. You look at Tisha Torres, who's another one who is kind of short at times, but is the fucking tiny tornado for a reason. I mean, it's going to be tough to match her. But I liked her spunk. I thought she clocked her that one time, but Marina did a pretty good job of kind of recovering from it quickly and kind of keep moving. But I thought she did the perfect thing. And she even sort of talked a little bit in the post-fight. It's tough for them to find a training partner to really mimic. You know, just like you can find guys, it's usually you have no problem finding people to be bigger, need what you have to do. But finding smaller people that have maybe the skills to match somebody that also, too, you don't really have a lot of preliminary, you know, information about anyways, you know, so I think she was in a tough position. So I thought she did a good job of just kind of doing what she needed to do, keep her at distance and work the hands and do what she needed to do. But, you know, was it pretty? Probably not. Was it all that exciting? But, hey, she got the W, and, you know, I guess I can't expect everybody in every fight to be super, super exciting. You know that some people are going to go out there and do what they need to do. And even we had the first fighter that came back in there, Justin Ledet. you know, he, you know, got booed, and everybody was like, oh, you know, he didn't go in that last thing. But as he was even saying, he's like, that's boxing. You know, nobody, when people look at a lot of boxers and they do circling around, they're waiting for the times. Nobody's booing constantly on that. That's just part of the thing. But I think when it comes to MMA, we're used to people rushing in there and doing whatever. But I think when people stick to the game plan, stick to know what they know is working, you know, who am I to tell somebody that's winning the fight, you know, put yourself at risk just for my entertainment. Then that's it right. starts getting in some gladiator shit, yep. you know, and it's like, you know, it's that's not, you know, because if they start doing like that and they're getting taking too many risks and then they get caught, take a loss, and then they're pushed down and who knows when you get the shot to come back up. So, I mean, but I definitely think we've seen when guys do throw it all out there and are exciting, a lot of times they get the pass.
That's true.
When they get the loss. But, you know, that there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And especially now, eventually, when things maybe change a little bit with the structure of the UFC, and maybe if you're not Lorenzo's favorite or whatever, that's not going to help you anymore. So you got to get them W's. It all boils down to you got to get to W's.
This is kind of going down a completely different path, but I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, Dana's still around, and obviously he has his relationships with fighters.
But he's going to be a figure piece. He's more of a figure piece at that point, a mouthpiece. A little bit. He's going to be a mouthpiece. I know he's like, I'm not bringing people in here to be my boss or whatever. But, yeah, bro, they're coming in as your boss.
No, I agree with that. I mean, you are right. I mean, I think they're going to trust him to a degree, but you are right. But I guess what I was thinking of was just the fact that, as you said, like, Lorenzo did have fighters that he you know, kind of had relationships with or whatever. That
And ring card girls.
Sir, sir. I don't know
hey,
what
it's,
you're
saying. It's 2:30 in the morning. I can speculate.
You up? No. So,
See?
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see. Moving on.
Quickly moving past that.
I don't need any Las Vegas billionaires upset at me. I can disappear real quick.
There's a lot of desert out there
that
we can be buried
lot
in.
Of desert. All right, let's go to the prelims. Court McGee. Gosh, man, I got to say, this was cool. And I'll just get it out of the way now. You know, it was a close fight. Dominic Steele, I thought, turned in a good performance. I actually scored this fight for Court McGee. I saw a lot of people didn't, but I did score the fight for him. Dominic Steele, I'll say, didn't really contest the decision too much, so I don't think he was incredibly upset at it.
Yeah.
I thought Court McGee did just enough to win. He certainly wasn't dominant by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think he did just enough to win the fight. But throw all that out the window, because I'll just say, I got goosebumps when he was coming to the cage, man. Utah was representing for their man from Ogden, which Ogden, if you don't know, and I definitely didn't know until this week, is essentially right between Salt Lake City and Provo. So it's, you know, 20-30 minutes away. We drove through it every day to get to Provo. So it's right down the road. And, I know the local media was hyped about it, and I'd like to hear what that scene was like when he came back in the back and talked to you guys. But just the standing ovation that he got, the fact that he came out and – I mean, damn near won the fight in the first round, landed that huge right hand, had the big takedown, almost had the choke. Dominic Steele deserves a lot of credit for fighting out of that and arguably coming back to win the fight. But just the atmosphere in that building, for it only being 6,000 people, I got to say, it was something special. And it was so cool to see Court, you know, even getting choked up on the mic after, because it was such a special moment for him too that it was just cool. It's one of those that I'll always remember.
Yeah, I agree. And again, that was like, I think, one of the only times I really remember we could really hear the crowd. So I can only imagine what it was like out there in the arena, because we weren't hearing really a lot. I mean, I know there's a lot of times we're trying to guess what song it was, because you could barely hear the song. So for us to be able to hear the crowd, I can only imagine what it was out there. And you're right, he did come back, and it was neat, and he actually kind of got a little emotional again. You know, he gave him a chance to talk about his kids being out there and, you know, what that meant for him and having the family and the support and what it meant for just MMA in Salt Lake City and in Utah in general, what that meant for the state, you know. And I think it was a good showing that there is support for MMA and for the UFC itself here. So, and it was good because, you know, Court, not that he's ever been the most showing of emotions and whatnot, right. You know, over the years I've seen him. So it was kind of nice to see him so relaxed and sort of, you know, he was composed, but he was, you know, to see that emotional side and see him excited, it was good. I felt happy for him. because it really felt like things were looking good for him right now. He's in a good spot right now is right. what it felt like ultimately. So hopefully he replicates what he did for this fight camp and just kind of keeps more moving forward with that, because, I mean, he's a very talented dude. And if he can keep his mind in it and keep that whatever focus and the people that he brought in, I mean, hopefully we'll see some more good things from him.
He works hard. I'll say that, man. You know, yeah. McCourt McGee goes out there that you're going to get a good effort. And this was a special moment. I was glad I got to see it. Marcin Tybura with the head kick knockout of Victor Pesta.
Crazy.
Nuts, man. That was, I mean, it was a good fight. You know, it felt like Tybura was getting some momentum, and I thought things were starting to swing in his direction. And then out of nowhere, he throws that head kick, and Pesta was out before he hit the ground. And I can tell you, the sound of his head hitting the canvas was gruesome. And I know it wasn't just me, because I had a couple other people that were around me that came up and said the same thing. They were like, oh, my God, that sound was gruesome. That was a, you know, Crow Cop-esque high kick knockout out cold. Highlight real stuff in the heavyweight division.
It's funny because we were doing an interview at the time when it ended, and I think most of us, myself included, assumed that it was just a punch knockout that did it.
Right.
You know, so once we saw the replay and the slow motion, there was a collective, what the fuck, you know, in the back room. Like, everybody was just like, oh, my God, it was a kick, you know, and it was so impressive. And I kind of asked him a little bit about that, and I was like, you know, is this something you've been doing, or is this just something you want to pull out? And sure enough, he said he'd been drilling it, you know. And I think we've seen instances before where one of our favorite dudes, the Black Beast, got taken down by Sean Jordan with one of these crazy kick moves that we're like, oh, that's never going to work.
Right.
I just wonder if this was another instance of, if we were at this guy's workout and he was doing this, we'd probably be like, man, that's never going to catch anybody. And it sure enough did, and it was perfectly placed. I mean, granted, I watched it in slow motion for the first time, so it looked probably even better when I saw it than when it, you know, how quick it happened in real time. But, yeah, very, very impressive. Super, super impressive. I mean, for heavyweights to start really being able to throw head kicks like that, I mean, that's a very exciting sign for what – you know, this new blood that's coming up in the heavyweight. I mean, we're seeing guys just do things that we haven't seen heavyweights doing.
There were two good heavyweight fights tonight. I mean, they really were. They were exciting. Yeah. That's a funny story. That was in New Orleans. I'll never forget that. Early on in the days of the road show, if you weren't listening back then, but Sean Jordan was practicing, like, spinning heel kicks at the open workouts, and we were like,
Dude's fucking crazy. Like, I mean, we love Sean Jordan, and
love Sean.
I felt like we probably could have went over to him like, Sean, please don't fucking try that, you know. And he probably would have been like, hey, man, you know, we're working on it. And lo and behold, it worked for him. And then we were like, man, what do we know?
Yeah, I don't know shit about MMA. That's what I found out. David Teamer picked up a TKO win over Jason Novelli, the Swedish man. He looked fantastic as well, man. A great win for him there. Novelli, you know, I'd had a chance to call his fights at Titan back when I was still doing commentating. Making his debut in the UFC at 37 years old. He kind of got a late start in the sport, but, you know, made it up to the UFC. And I thought that was cool. But David looked fantastic. And the great thing about that was not only when he dropped him, but then as Novelli was trying to scramble back up, David just crushed him again with a couple of super accurate punches, and I thought that was a fantastic finish there. And gosh, these prelims were on fire. And then, of course, our man of the week, Taruto Ishihara, with the devastating left hand finish of Horacio Gutierrez. Horacio Gutierrez was actually looking pretty decent, to be honest with you. He was managing the distance well, doing some decent stuff on the feet, and I think frustrating Ishihara a little bit. And then Taruto just saw the opening, dropped in the big left hand, and then the nasty strikes on the ground as well to get the finish, and picked up $50,000 for a performance of the night bonus. Taruto,
I love you, my bitches.
He's got that star quality, man. He really does got that star quality. It's funny because he did get it on the microphone, but you guys didn't get to hear it, so you asked him to kind of reenact things in the back.
Yeah.
And he had no problem with that.
Nope. No problem at all.
Well, since we've brought you the Taruto Ishihara saga all week long, And I will tease that we might have some more stuff next week as well if everything goes as planned. I figured you'd probably want to hear this little bit from the madman, the wild man, Teruto Ishihara.
1-2-1-2. Hey, yo.
UFC.
Oh, okay.
It's not UFC, so you can say whatever.
Yeah, you can say whatever.
Oh, motherfucker.
No.
Sorry.
Sorry.
If you could, right in front of it.
There
you go. Perfect.
Are you ready?
Let's get him to speak a little bit about the win. How happy is he with that win? And is it everything that he had planned or hoped that it would come out to be?
He's like, who would not be happy? Tell him.
Coming out there, what was the game plan? Was it to try to come out there, be exciting, throw the hands? Was with the knockout the goal that he was going for the whole time?
Game plan knockout なってたのか、それとも違うかです
か。今回はその相手がでかいっていうのもあって、そのこのなんか標高もあったから、そういその相手のインタビューを見て、なんか左警戒してるっていうのも聞いてたから、ボディドローとかも出て、嫌がらせして、で最終左に頼ればいいかなと思ってたけど。
So, Salt Lake is high altitude, and he read an interview of Harach saying something about worrying about Teru's left hand. So he just wanted to touch, throw some left straight down the body, leg kicks and whatnot, and then when the time is right, he wanted to throw that left hand, but he didn't expect to throw that left hand that quick.
I know at the end our audio kind of went out here, but he had some messages for the Salt Lake City ladies. Can he maybe clarify and repeat for us back here that maybe didn't get a chance to really hear it?
Mic performance で消されたんだって。
何？
だから今言っときなって。
What the fuck？ 嘘やろ？
だから今言っときなって。それだけの人
たち。I'm ready for party tonight. Yeah. Come with me. Salt Lake bitches.Okay.
A lot of featherweights on this card tonight. Is there anyone that you see as maybe a potential opponent in an exciting fight, maybe with someone like Cub Swanson or the winner of the Rodriguez Caceres fight?
This card is featherweight guys, but today we fought the guy that if he wants to do it in the
future, he's not interested.
He said he has no interest. He doesn't know anybody.
Who's interested? You know.
He said, you guys know who he is interested in. Who?
My bitches.
All right.
How soon until he wants to get back in there?
いつ試合したい、また。
そう、大きいところで、とにかく、この目立てるところ、大きいところで、その、なんていうの、目立てるところに俺を出せば、俺はいい仕事するし、もう分かってきたやろ、みんな。そろそろ俺がいい仕事するっていうの。
He said, you guys should already know that the bigger the stage he is, he's going to perform. So he wants to fight in a big stage, big audience, big crowd. So put him in there.
Justin Buckles, what's the best podcast in MMA?
Best podcast in
MMA? Start the show. Start the show, what do you mean?
Podcast, the best podcast. MMA界. Start radio.
Start the radio. Start the radio. Yeah. Fuck yeah, start the radio.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So Teruto Ishihara living the life as he does. I will say, Cole Coffee, did you notice that a couple different times this week he mentioned that basically the UFC censoring him? He kind of referred to that.
Well,
and I don't want to say censoring him, but I mean, he did say like I can speak freely, right? Like,
yeah,
I can. It's, I mean, so it kind of makes me wonder.
But it's nothing new. I mean, when you think about it, you know, the last thing they want to do is have these guys go out there and just run around saying whatever, you know, because we see the backlash that immediately happens, you know, usually when somebody says something, because you know, if they start being comfortable saying whatever, then what's to stop the next thing you know they try to pull out some joke and it. you know, it's a rape joke or it's a blah, blah, blah. It's a slippery slope, you know.
It
so
is.
I think they try to curb it in the, you know, nip it in the bud, you know, quickly. But he's so funny. And half the time they're like, we don't understand a thing he's saying anyways.
But it just sounds awesome.
But it sounds awesome. And it's funny. He's infectious, you know, and it's funny, you know. So we're putting out, and I love reading the comments because I never know what people are going to say if people start to enjoy it as much, you know, because, you know,
some
of course.
Some people hate it.
Some people, you know, can't take it or whatever, and I can totally understand that. I can get it, you know, because it starts to stink a little bit of just being playing it too much, you know, doing it whatever, just a little bit. But when you look at him, he's infectious. He's so funny. He just like laughs. He makes me want to learn Japanese so I can hear the joke in its proper language, where I don't have to get it translated to me or whatever. And then when he, you know, goes and says whatever. But even just the way he comes in the back, he was playing around with the microphone. He was having a good time. Granted, it's a lot easier when you're, you know, have a big win and a big exciting win or whatever. But he's got a personality, and I mean, that's a good thing. You really don't ever want to see that kind of get smashed down too much. But, you know, of course the UFC's got to do what they got to do. They can't just let a guy run around. I mean, I've actually been even kind of surprised that, you know, when we were asking him questions and interviewing him the other day and, you know, started going, you know, we're prodding him in a sense, just hoping that he keeps saying my bitches. I love my bitches. I thought at one point, you know, PR would have just came over and be like, hey, can you guys
maybe
not do
bitches
this?
Talk.
Can you maybe less bitches talk or whatever? But, you know, and maybe eventually it will get to that point. But I think if anything right now, you know, there is a shock value to the sport in itself. And I think part of that too is, you know, these guys are going to go out there and say some things. And right now he's not saying anything that, I mean, yes, some people might get pissed off, but I mean, it still comes off as like slapsticky joke stuff when he does it. You know, I don't think he's actually running through the streets. I mean, even though I think that'd be a fucking hilarious viral video. I have all these ideas of what I want to do with him running through the streets, saying my bitches to all kinds of people, but I'll just keep it for my dreams. I'll just keep it for when I sleep at night and have funny Terudo Ishihara my bitches dreams.
Wow, things are taking a bizarre turn.
I'm getting tired or whatever. I don't know. You don't get inspirations of like funny videos and things when you like sleep. That's why when people write great songs, they'll wake up in the middle of the night and they jot it down. I have like great ideas from videos at times. Then I don't think about them again. I wake up in the morning, they're completely gone. They're like just off into the ether.
All right, let's talk about quickly the fight pass prelims. Cub Swanson, Tetsuya Kawajiri. This fight was absolutely amazing. You know, knowing the conversation we had earlier in the week with Cub Swanson and him saying that, you know, he kind of admitted that he was considering walking away from the sport, and but still had love for it and wanted to stay in it. I thought this fight was fantastic. Kawajiri looked incredible early on. Definitely won the first round. You know, Cub looked good, but Kawajiri then, you know, turned to his wrestling, and I think, you know, as good as Cub's takedown defense was, Kawajiri is just so strong and such a crafty veteran. He was actually able to get the fight to the floor, and really, I'm sure Cub had to be incredibly frustrated, but Cub just kept digging down deep, man, I just thought this was a phenomenal fight, and of course, certainly a huge win for Cub Swanson.
Yeah, and I got to think, man, like, one, we always go back to the fact that, you know, great coaches help make great fighters, and I think, you know, after Kawajiri was so tough that first round, I think going back there and just hearing, like, some of the stuff that Greg Jackson, those guys say to just kind of get him into the right spot, because he came back out and just put on a perfect performance of what he needed to do, you know, when Kawajiri would get down, you know, he was telling him to move and do the right things to kind of just counter whatever, and then his heart and his grit came out, and yeah, it was a super, super exciting fight, and Kawajiri's a beast, man. Dude's like 38 years old and looks super fit, and he's super strong, and you know, typically when somebody starts getting around that age, you want to start thinking like, all right, you know, they got to be thinking about wrapping it up soon, I imagine, or whatever. Then you see performances like that, and you're like,
he's still competitive with the best good. In the division.
Yeah, he's good. He's got some more time, you know.
Absolutely. Kawajiri is still a legend of the sport, and you can still put him against anybody in the division. I know he's had some losses as of late, but, I mean, he's literally fighting the best of the best in the division, and he's competitive. So I thought that was a phenomenal fight. I know it was a big win for Cub Swanson. I'm sure an emotional one for him as well. And then you touched on earlier Justin Ledet, a Texas boy, actually. I had to look. He's from Rocheron, Texas, I believe is how they said that. I am a proud Texan myself. I had never heard of that place, man. I had to look it up on a map.
It's a big state.
It is a big state.
Big state.
It's a tiny little town just to the south of Houston, it looked like. He picked up a big win over Chase Sherman. Chase Sherman, another guy, had a chance to commentate his fight in Titan. I know that he's a Mississippi kid that comes in looking to bang, and I thought this fight was going to be a lot of fun. It did end up being a lot of fun. Ledet's jab was just insane, man. He was just picking Sherman apart, and I did think it was kind of a damn shame because it was a great fight. I mean, those two dudes were just going in and throwing bombs, and then Ledet, I think he did kind of fight smart at the end. He put it on cruise control, knew he was up, just decided I'm not going to stand there. And Sherman played to the crowd. He'd stop and wave his hands and, you know, hey, come on, engage with me or whatever. I think Ledet did what he should have done. And I think it was a damn shame, to be honest with you, that the crowd booed him at the result, because I think Ledet had looked phenomenal up to that point.
Yeah, I agree.
Had to be a little disappointing for him too, I'm sure.
Yeah, but he also, you know, he kind of said the fact that, you know, I think he realized that, you know, he was in MMA, he went and did some boxing because he really, really enjoyed it and come back in MMA. I think he was smart enough that he even said that he kind of blocks those things out because he stuck to his game plan. He knows what he needs to do. He knows that's boxing. So for all he cared, you know, it was just random noise or whatever, you know, even their booing. He didn't take offense to it, didn't think whatever. He was just like, hey, that's boxing. If you don't understand it, you don't understand it. You know, that's what it is. But you know who else always goes in there looking to bang?
Who's that?
Teruto Ishihara.
He's looking to bang
my bitches
in the cage and out of the cage. No doubt about it. All right, well, listen, UFC Fight Night 92 is in the books. We'll tie it up now because we've actually got to get some more work done, and we got to head to the airport, man. We're actually flying home early, which is nice. We'll have an off week next week. Not for the show, of course. We'll do a show because we always do a show, because that's what the MMA Roadshow does. But an off week in terms of live MMA events, and then, of course, UFC 202 after that, and then we go to Vancouver, and then we got Germany, and then we got all kinds of stuff going on. So it's big. Utah, gorgeous state.
It was beautiful.
Not the biggest fan of their liquor laws. Getting a beverage is a little difficult at times. Questionable choice in live music acts sometimes.
Well, Provo, perhaps. But that's a college town. I think you see people come through in different acts. But we saw some beautiful, wonderful things because it was a college town. So, it was interesting. This was a fun trip. It was different. I think it could have been a hell of a lot worse. You know, hearing, you know, what we were coming into and thinking that we were going to be in the middle of nowhere with, you know, no drinks to help the end of the evening out, you know, and we were definitely surprised when it was not like that. It was a great time. We found some great food places here. Mm-hmm. The people were super, super nice. But yeah, it was beautiful. It was great every morning to open up the window and see the big mountains in the background and stuff. And it really, really is beautiful. So I could see why people come here and decide to make this home.
Well, I had some people hit me up on Twitter and felt like we were kind of negative about Utah, and I just want to say I'm sorry if that was the case. I like Utah. I would change the liquor laws. I would make frosty beverages a little stronger and a little more readily available, especially later in the night. But other than that, they're great, and the fans were phenomenal. This was a fun event.
No, it's good. I could definitely see them coming back here again. I think this was a great, great place for them to touch on it and stuff. And arena was nice, was beautiful, it was really, really cool. So I mean, the Jazz, man, they got a great place in there, so good for them, you know. Hopefully next time there will not be a huge festival going on so we have to stay so far away from where all the venue and stuff is. But if anything else, in the positive, I mean, it was good. We got to see Provo, and I've never been to Provo before, but it was nice. It was a beautiful little town, man. Good people. So I wouldn't mind visiting again.
Thumbs up. We think the UFC will be back, and hopefully when they do, we'll actually get to explore Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City.
We had a lot of people telling us that there were some great things to do in Salt Lake City, and to be honest with you, we really have seen about a block of Salt Lake City. So
yeah.
Anyway, fun fight, UFC Fight 992. If you didn't catch it all, I would recommend that you go back and catch the prelims. They were fantastic. Main event was phenomenal. It was a classic. Yair Rodriguez is must-watch TV for me. I'm telling you, keep your eyes on that kid. I think he's got great things ahead of him in his future. If nothing else, he's just fun as hell to watch. Main card, some wins there, but nothing that just lit you up. But the prelims were just action-packed. So if you missed those, make sure you check them. They're definitely worth it. If you don't have Fight Pass, sign up for that free trial just to watch Cub Swanson and Caligiuri. I don't care if you keep it after that, but at least get the free thing and then watch Cub Swanson and Caligiuri. So, all right, well, listen, we're going to rush off. We got to get this thing done. We got to get this thing posted on the internet, and then we got to get on a plane. So let me just say, before we head home, thanks for listening.